Thanks for tuning in today. Today, we have a very special guest. We have Melissa Flores. She is a writer and producer known for her work with the Power Rangers franchise, including the feature film Saban Power Rangers, the long-running children's live-action series, and the award-winning film. Let's welcome Melissa to the show. Hi, Melissa.
Hello. How are you?
Great. It's so nice to meet you.
So nice to meet you. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. Melissa, can you say your last name for me? Because I love the way you say it.
Oh, it's Melissa Flores.
Oh, my gosh. So I found out that you are, did you grow up in USA? Are you from here, Los Angeles?
I did. I was born in Chicago. My dad was an immigrant. He came from Jalisco, Mexico, and he crossed the desert to get here. He's a legal citizen now. He's been for, you know, decades and decades. And my mom is from Texas, so she's pure Chicana. So she was born here as well. But both Latino, Mexican, American, through and through. And we've grown up in Los Angeles. I've been in Los Angeles since I was two. So very much an Angelino Mexicano.
Oh, wow. I love your last name. Is it flowers? Does it mean flowers?
Yes. It's Spanish for plural for flowers. And it's from Spain proper. It's a Spanish name.
Oh, I just love it. It's so beautiful. I mean,
thank you.
Yeah. And so I want to ask you, you said you grew up at two, so you were in Los Angeles. So when you're growing up, did you and your family go see movies? Did you have a favorite movie growing up?
Oh, I was obsessed with movies. In fact, that was actually the only way my mom knew how to punish me. Because I, you know, back then, you know, you could spank kids. Not that I would now, but like, you know, for me, that just never worked for me. I just was one of those people that would be like, okay, you know, it's over in 2 seconds and I can go and continue to play. But you know, we didn't have DVR and TiVo and anything back then that could record stuff or even something we could go back and online and look. And so she knew that if I missed my Star Trek Voyager or my Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Xena Warrior Princess, then, you know, that was, you know, life and death for me. So that was really how she got me. That was her way of punishing me, because I just, if I missed the movie, you know, when would I see it again except for VHS? So yeah, I was always obsessed. Ever since I was a little kid, I was either obsessed with books or movies or television. I just loved stories and I just wanted to live in every other world. Because it was just so much fun. Anything was possible.
Yeah, that's amazing. Like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, that's a good one. Yeah, I had like the book with the production book with all the like just the pictures and the artwork. It was amazing, beautiful book. So yeah, that was a good one. And so your mom, your mom would tell you if you're bad. Moms and dads are really clever at finding out what kids really like, and they know how to use it to like get them to behave.
Oh no, it absolutely, because that would never have worked on my sisters, but on me specifically, you know, the middle child, the little loony crazy one, you know, undiagnosed ADHD, like that was the only way she could get me to calm down was, you know, you're not going to be able to watch your show tonight and you cannot, you know, it's one of those things that if you missed it, you missed it. So I was a good girl.
I was a middle child too. Yeah. So were you writing back then, or like, were you looking at like, oh, that's one of my favorite, did you have like a favorite producer? Did you know what Criterion Collection was? Like, how did you start figuring out like, I'm going to be a writer, I'm going to go produce stuff?
You know, it's funny because I grew up right when the internet was starting to become a big thing. And one of the things I loved about the internet was the community part of coming around shows that I was obsessed with that I had never been able to talk to anybody else about before. And through that, I discovered fan fiction. And fan fiction is basically when you're a fan of the show and you write stories about your favorite characters on the show. And I started reading all these stories that other people were writing. And at the time, I was a voracious reader. I would read anything I got my hands on. And so to be able to see that people were writing stories about my favorite shows and be able to read more and interact more with the show, it got me inspired to try writing myself. And so that's really became my film school. You know, I started learning to write and I learned prose. And once I learned prose, I learned structure. I learned, you know, act one, act two, act three, and rising tension and all is lost and all of these little bits you learn from fan fiction, believe it or not. And so, I was obsessed with certain directors, like a lot of the Hong Kong action movie directors I was really into. Like, I was very much obsessed with anything that included a strong female lead, because I was this, you know, queer young girl who didn't know she was gay yet. And I would just, you know, the big romantic movies, as much as I loved them, didn't resonate as much with me as I wanted to. And so I would always look for these beautiful, amazing action female stars, because that's who I wanted to be and that's who I really looked for. So I became obsessed with like Michelle Yeoh, who is like amazing. Like, she's, you know, the career that she has now is amazing, but she started as an Hong Kong action star. So I like would watch all her movies, and I was obsessed with Xena Warrior Princess. So all of the stuff that was going on in New Zealand with that kind of action. And that's kind of how I got inspired, because that was my version of representation back then. You know, unless you're watching telenovelas, back then you didn't see a lot of Hispanics. You didn't see a lot of gay women. I didn't even know what it was to be gay at the time. So to be able to see these strong women that had like these incredible relationships with other women and with men being seen as their equals, that was my version of representation. And I just wanted more of that. And so it inspired me to want to create more of that, to really see what I could do, and through that fall in love with the stories of cinema, because it inspired me, inspired other people. So places like The Silence of the Lambs is my favorite Criterion movie, just because, again, Clarice Starling was my hero. You know, she was this incredibly strong woman, kind of diminutive, but like so sharp. And the book and the movie and the way it was adapted into the movie, you just saw the strength that she had in this like male dominated environment and how she had to go up against Hannibal in such an interesting way. And so those were the stories that really resonated with me and why I suddenly ultimately became obsessed with creating more stories about that, because it inspired me. I wanted to begin to figure out how to inspire other people.
Yeah. I know when I was little, my dad retired from the Navy, and we lived far away from people. And my sister was older. My other one was baby. So I would take Gilligan's Island, because we would like plane the trees and make a fort. I was Gilliganette. And everyone goes, Gilliganette? I go, yeah. I just made the lead character a female. And I go, they go, don't you want to be Ginger or Marianne? I go, no, they don't have as much fun as Gilligan does. I just was rewriting. I just rewrote this TV stories. I didn't even know it was a writer. I just was play acting. So yeah, I mean, good for you. Did you have any, like, when you were playing with your sister, did y'all play any kind of...
It was funny because, you know, I was obsessed with She-Ra and He-Man and all of those action kind of figures. And my sisters were obsessed with Barbies. And so my sisters, one is about 14 months older than me, and the other one's about 4 years younger than me. And so, you know, we did all play together and we got along for the most part, but I really very much was a strange, weird one. And they always wanted to play Barbie, and I was so bored by it because they just wanted to go to the mall. And there's nothing wrong with that, you know, that's amazing for like, that's the world that they see and that's what they want to do, and they wanted to have pool parties, but I wanted to go have adventures. You know, I wanted to go fight a lion or go like find a dragon. And they would get so mad at me because I always wanted to play the boys, because the boys, you know, got to be the ones that got to do that stuff. And so like after a while I would just go off on my own and create my own adventures with my Voltron. Like my Voltron would fight my She-Ra. And while they played their pool parties, and it was fun. My sister actually really liked She-Ra too. She had all the She-Ra stuff. I had all the He-Man stuff. But I do remember like getting so upset because I didn't want to have another pool party. I wanted to go and like kill the dragon. And it was fun though. Like my younger sister, especially my older sister, got really into makeup and all of that. And that was great. I mean, good for her. But my younger sister, I noticed, was a lot more malleable because she was 4 years younger. So I was able to like really make her watch and get obsessed about everything I was into. So I had a Judy Garland phase and an MGM musical phase. And I just like, we watched those movies over and over and over again. And I got obsessed with Preston Sturges and all the comedies from the 30s and how quick they are and how the humor just goes fast, 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 fast. And I made her watch those. And, you know, thank God I had both sisters who were so different, but so open to that kind of eclectic culture, because I know I was very much a geek and they just kind of accepted it. They didn't know what to do with it, but they accepted it. My mom too, God bless her soul.
your sister's probably like, because and ours, you know, we all had all the Barbies. And nobody wanted my little sister to go around your dolls. And you'd get like, you should touch my Barbie, because she would break the legs and the arms. And then if she, the doll with the head, there was a doll with the head that you put makeup on and you do their hair, you got to watch out because she'll cut the hair or like, you know, like totally, you know, put like ruin the face with her, give it graffiti face. So at least your sisters were like, hey, our Barbies are safe with you.
Yes. I don't think we ever just, you know what, I did destroy things, but only because of my ADHD, because I just was bored and I wanted to see if something would break. And that was, but it was never my sister's things. It was never my sister's things. So I got lucky with that. I got lucky with that. But for me, I just liked living in my books and my TVs and my movies, and they were perfectly fine with that.
Yeah.
They were like, okay, we'll go practice makeup. And you can watch Star Trek Voyager for the 30th time. That's okay. And then I just assumed that I would learn how to do makeup and it would just like happen. And then I was like, oh, you were practicing and that's why you're good at it now. Oh, okay. That makes sense. I should have been doing some of that.
But that's so funny. It's amazing like how our childhood, we're literally learning to like, you know, write plays, act, and use our imagination. And then so did you go to college or where did you go like afterwards? Like how did you go get a job or?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up, I was very fortunate. We grew up in the inner city. My mother and my father was a trash collector, a garbage man, worked very hard, and we're very lucky that, you know, you got a really steady income. My mom actually started working at USC when she was as a waitress, and she worked her way up to contracts manager at USC for housing. But she stayed there for as long as she did because she wanted us to eventually get into USC. Because then I could get free tuition and all three of us could get free tuition. And otherwise, like she was very candid about it. She said, you know, you need to get scholarships and you need to get into USC because otherwise we don't know how we're going to pay for you. Because we were at that weird level where we weren't poor, but we definitely were very lower middle class in terms of the money that my parents were bringing in. So, she was always very important to her that we get an education, all three of us, because she didn't get one growing up, and she wanted a doctor in the family. That was her ultimate dream. And so she got us into a private Christian school when we were young, called Los Angeles Christian School. It was essentially a school run by sponsors, but it was for inner city kids. And so thankfully, it was small classes, and I was seen as a bright kid, so I got a lot of extra attention. I got to do a lot of really great things. And then when we got to high school, we went to a school. Me and my sister Priscilla went to a school called the California Academy of Math and Science. And at that time, I thought I was going to be an engineer, so it was perfect. It was on a college campus. We got to take college classes starting junior year, and it turns out that with my ADHD, I cannot memorize bones to save my life. So that was a very confusing part of my life because I really truly thought I was going to be an engineer or a doctor. And it just, once I got there, once I had to study, it just, something just did not connect for me. It was really difficult. And so that is really where I discovered my creative phase. It almost felt like it felt like I was doing one side of my brain for so much because I was going to math and science camps on weekends and I was doing college level stuff in the summer and I was also working. And I think the other side of my brain, the creative side of it, just kind of exploded. So when I got to college, I did not want to be an engineer. I did not want to be a doctor. And thankfully, luckily, because of, you know, the amount of hard work that we put in and also the hard work my mother put in, we were able to get into USC, all three of us. And so I majored in communication because I had no idea. I thought I was going to be a doctor and or an engineer. And I discovered that that is not in the cards for me because I just cannot measure and memorize anything. And I didn't know why. And I was like, well, what's the one thing that allows me to figure it out? And it was communication. So I went to college for communication and then I graduated and I didn't actually, so go ahead. Oh, okay. So I graduated and then I got a job as a PA for a show called Biography. Because again, still had no idea what I wanted to do. And in reality, I did. I did know what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a writer. I wanted to create content. But coming as a low-income kid from the ghetto, it's really difficult to tell your parents even, like, this is what I want to do. Because it's hard for anybody to understand it. Especially, you know, a family who wants a doctor or an engineer. And so, you know, to my mom's credit and my dad too, you know, they tried to support it in the best way they could, but it was one of those things where you make so little money as a PA. I worked my way up from a PA Biography. I ended up at FX. I was an assistant at FX in Current. I was in research for 3 years. And the money year I was making was so little, and I had all these college loans to pay off. And I also got a master's at USC in communication. And I just couldn't afford it. I couldn't afford to be an assistant anymore because you're paying, back then it was like $450 a week. And that's fine if you have parents that are able to pay everything else for you, but it's not when you're just a kid trying to make it on your own and trying to pay off your college debt. And so I stopped that. I took a job as an assistant at a finance company. And I was like, this is great. I can work. I'm making a lot more money than I did as an assistant for entertainment. At a finance, you get paid, you know, high five figures. And I can just write because it's so much easier. I'm not killing myself working 13, 14 hours a day. And I ended up bored out of my mind. And so I thought, okay, I'll try to get a job as a writer's assistant because I really do want to write. I think I'm good at it. I know that, you know, I have had the feedback and the work, and I put in the work, and I was at FX for so long and at HBO for so long. I know what it takes. But at the time, I think it was a lot harder for somebody that of my skin color and my gender to get into a lot of these rooms. And I remember there was a couple shows that I got really close to, and just for one reason or another, it didn't work. I remember one of them, they literally told me, no, what was between me and a guy, and they went with the guy because they said that the jokes in the writer's room were a little too sexist and they didn't think that a girl could handle that. So I didn't get that job. And then it got really, really frustrating for a little while. But I didn't want to give up. I kept going. And thankfully, at the time, the company I worked on was Saban Capital Group. They had just, the owner was a man named Chaim Saban, who had originally brought Power Rangers to the U.S. And when I talked to the general counsel of that company, I said, hey, look, I'm getting really bored. I'm thinking about leaving and trying to like start again in the entertainment industry. She's like, well, we might actually have a position for you. And he had started a company called Saban Brands because he had just bought Power Rangers and he had just bought Paul Frank, and he needed a company to manage those brands. And so I met with Brian Casentini, who was the head of the development department. And thankfully he saw the creative side of me and he created a position for me as a coordinator and in the production and development at Saban Brands. And through that, 10 years later, I had worked myself up to a director, and I was then the brand expert for Power Rangers 10 years later. And I was able to do a lot of really amazing things as a producer and as a studio executive for that brand. We were able to really do, like, we were able to do films, television, comic books, publishing, short film, games, like everything we did, like I was able to play a hand in it. But it took a minute. It took a minute to get there.
And but so you're I kicking butt distracted. Now. You're kicking butt with the Power Rangers.
Yes. Yes. And then so then Power Rangers, we did the 2017 movie, which was a lot of fun. Didn't do as well at box office as I hoped it would, but it was still amazing. We had the long running television show, and the brand was bought by Hasbro after that. And so I moved with Hasbro. Hasbro hired me as well to be the Power Rangers, the head of storytelling for Power Rangers there. And then 2 years later, right before COVID hit, they bought E1, and my department was no longer needed. But honestly, that was a blessing in disguise for me, because it was one of those things where it's like, okay, time to put up or shut up, Melissa. Like, you've always wanted to be a writer. You put in your time as a producer, as a creative executive, you know what you're doing. It's time to actually, if you want to be a writer, it's time to go for it. And so I created my own company, and I've been creating my own content ever since. And it's been amazing. So it's been a lot of fun. And I wouldn't have gotten there, and I wouldn't have made the connections that I made to be able to do it successfully, were it not for the 10 years that I'd had with Power Rangers. And the amount of work that I put in there. So it worked exactly the way it was supposed to. And I'm really happy to be where I am now.
Wow. So that door that shut made you look at your, like, introspective, like you said, you know, like, this is do or die time. And you did it. You formed a company. Yeah. And how long did it take you to write? Like, did you have stuff already written, or did you start writing, or...
So I had stuff already written, because I was starting to get to the point where I knew that my time with Power Rangers was coming to an end, just because I was starting to feel not so challenged. I had done a movie, I had done a television series, I had done comic books, I had done video games. Like, what else was there left to do with Power Rangers? And it was all Power Rangers all the time. And as much as I love Power Rangers, there's such amazing things about Power Rangers, and I'm so proud of the work that I put in with them. I was itching to do something else. So I had started writing, but really, truly, I didn't get the body of work that I was working on until after I left, because COVID hit and there was nothing else to do. So I started writing different things, obviously spec scripts. I started a company with a friend of mine who was a former financier, called Amalgam Tales, and we started developing our own projects as well. And so we have couple of projects. We started developing things for other people. So I started working as a consultant, and that paid the bills while I was pitching series other places. So I'm under NDA for a lot of things, so it's hard to talk about. But the one that is coming out that I'm really excited about, that I can talk about, is an Image comic book series called The Dead Lucky, which is going to be coming out August 3rd. And then I also did a series called The Unleashed for Twitch. Was a lot of fun too. It was a superhero hybrid digital series that came out for Twitch. So it was nice to be able to work in other mediums as well as television. So while I'm working on the television stuff, it was also great to be able to find those other avenues that still need writers and still need creative minds, like podcasts, like video games, like comic books. And what I've noticed, in doing that, is a lot of times people are looking for established IP from those exact genres to go into television. So it's actually a lot easier to start your IP in one of those avenues to get seen that way, because the executives are looking for established IP that are in those avenues to be able to pull from and create television shows. So it's actually been a niche that's worked out quite well for me.
Oh, amazing. Amazing. That's fantastic. So you start your own company. Do you want to share the name of your company, or like, do you want to tell our audience is amazing? We're hitting number one weekly in countries. Is there a show that you want them to go check out?
So my company is called Kachapa Productions. And, but the one that I really would love to shout out is Amalgam Tales. And we are two female women of color who are looking to find those stories that you don't necessarily see on a daily basis. Representation is really super important to me. And again, there's projects in the works. We just can't talk about them right now because, but yeah, I mean, I would love for everybody to check out The Dead Lucky when it comes out. It is about a half Chinese, half Mexican former veteran who comes home to San Francisco and discovers that San Francisco has been privatized by a technology company. Ooh. And they are promising to make San Francisco the city of tomorrow, but in doing so are driving out all the homeless and all the lower income people and gentrifying everything. So there's no place for everybody in the world. And Bibi, our hero, is struck with a lot of PTSD and survivor's guilt, as she is the only person who has survived from her platoon after an incident in Afghanistan. She's come back with these electrical powers, and she must now figure out how to use them to create a mech to fight back against these tech bros before they take over San Francisco. It's a lot of fun. We deal with a lot of really interesting themes about PTSD, about isolation, about technology, and I'm really excited about it. It's the first, aside from The Unleashed, it's the first book that's truly mine, that's not Power Rangers, that's out, that I wrote, and so I'm really excited about it. And The Unleashed on Twitch is a lot of fun too. So it is its own IP. It's a superhero show that is half RPG, half scripted television. And we've got an amazing cast and it was a lot of fun. So those two, I think, would be the ones to check out right now. A lot more coming. I just can't talk about it.
Oh my gosh. Now, are you, the name of your company, how do you say that correctly?
Capucci? Amalgam Tales. So A-L-M-A-G-A-N. And Tales, T-A-L-E-S.
Yeah.
And we've got some projects in development there too that we're looking to take out pretty soon.
Yeah. And the shows we listed in the summary too, but your production company, how do you say it? Capucci? How do you say that correctly?
Cachapa.
Cachapa.
Cachapa. And it's literally cachapa. It's like, you know, a karate chop.
Ah, how cute is that?
I come from an action background.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, so oh my gosh, so I want everyone to just really be on the lookout for her films. It just sounds so amazing. Of your films, the Twitch digital hybrid series sounds so awesome, and The Unleashed. I want to invite you back for part two because we still got a lot to talk about, Melissa. Do you want to come back for part two so that
we can do it?
Sure. I really want, because you also do voiceovers on some couple of the things, the shows.
Yes.
We've got plenty to talk about. So okay. I will come back for part two with Melissa Flores. We've got so much to talk about. From her journey from USC to playing with He-Man to actually writing comic books and working with Saban Power Rangers. You're gonna really laugh. Like my friend lives somewhere up, I think, I don't know, it was Gated Mulholland Drive, but they go, oh, that's the Saban's house. The guy that, it was this big giant mansion, but the Saban clinic too for dogs, right? They have those clinics for dogs that he really does wonderful things for people with pets with lower income, because
him and his wife are very charitable. They do a lot of charitable work that I've actually admired quite a bit.
Yeah. So that's what I remember, the Saban clinic. I go, oh, those are the ones that do Power Rangers, because there's a lot of artists out here. We're gig workers. You know, a lot of people are working in the business. Like if you work for an assistant, like you said, a PA, it's just not enough money to pay for LA rent. So the fact that you did it, Melissa, this is amazing. So let's invite everyone back to part two. And if everyone wants to take a second, hit the 5 stars to subscribe, download the podcast. And if you'd like to support the podcast, buy me coffee sneakies, or just subscribe to our YouTube channel, Storytime Fun. Thanks, everyone. We'll be right back with part two with Melissa Flores.